Couple months off, as not a lot of stuff to talk about, right? I'm in education as well, so time to recharge and ramp it back up. I believe August 9th is when we're going to return here to First String Sports and bring you more Central Valley Sports Report. But two more episodes to talk about all the great stuff that's happening in the Central section. My gosh, this is there certainly is a lot of stuff going on. Baseball championships, softball championships. Oh, and if you haven't heard, there's a CIF State Track and Field championships going on at Veterans Memorial Stadium. Lots to talk about with that. Yeah, First String Sports. This is the place to be. It's what I call it. I do my show from the Letterman's Jacket Room off to the right-hand side. Fresno Christian, Edison, Hoover, Bullard, Kerman, Sierra to my right. Those are the cool Letterman's jackets. Clovis North, Clovis High, and Parlier. They share the same color scheme, the same jacket. There's Sanger, Torres, Madera, Kingsburg. I'll be talking about them today. Clovis West, of course. And it's always fun. The store opens up at 9 o'clock. Obviously, the show starts a little after 10, goes all the way to 12 o'clock. But, yeah, there's people that come in throughout my show. I'm looking straight at them. Sometimes they're getting fitted for their Letterman's jackets. They're getting it all, dialed in, what they want on it. If they want their name and script on the back. Heck, you don't even have to be an athlete to buy a Letterman's jacket. I see people come in and get their band and their music patches, their academic patches as well. So they'll definitely come and hook you up. And I think it's, what, a two-week turnaround from ordering your jacket to coming and picking up. So First String Sports, the only place where you can get Letterman's jackets here in the Central Valley. All right, let's start with the Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating weather report. I actually forgot to do this last week, and I don't have to tell you how hot it is right now, do I? We're looking at 86 degrees at 10:08 in the morning, a high of 102. So the 100s have officially hit. I think it hit 101 yesterday. Maybe 100 degrees on the dot, and you definitely felt it. So the summer heat is here upon us. I think this is the only 100-degree, triple-digit weather we're going to have. Next week's going to dip into the 90s and go back to up to 95. So it's official here. So thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring 1430 ESPN. So there's the weather report. All right, so we are, like I mentioned, officially what I call the end game in the sports season. In the school year. Tomorrow is June's May 31st today, which is pretty wild here. So graduations are around the corner. My daughter is graduating from Boulder this year. My youngest daughter, I got my own eighth grade graduation that I'm a part of this coming week. So what does that mean? That means baseball, softball championships, state track and field, all that good stuff. Today, what's going on in the show? Well, four baseball champions have been crowned. Four softball champions have been crowned. There's a couple games today, so we're going to break that down. There's a really cool event that we had on Thursday. We, meaning 1430 ESPN, we celebrated our student athletes of the week that were all a part of the show, part of Phil Bonatti's Behind the Bench show in the afternoon. That was a really cool deal. So we had a big ceremony on Thursday. I'm going to talk about that for a bit. Like I mentioned, those CIF Central Section championships and the State Track and Field championships at Veterans Memorial Stadium. Going to be talking about that. Around 10:40, Lemoore coach John Freitas is coming on. The Tigers won their first Central Section baseball title in school history. School's been well over 100 years old. And this is their first baseball title. You think about all the great athletes that have come through Lemoore in the history of the school, right? Lorenzo Neal, Tommy Smith, of course, Olympics, and just tons of, but this is their first baseball title. And Coach Freitas was actually the athletic director, and he had to take over the team midway through the year. And those guys just went ahead and won the whole darn thing. They were the top seed, and it wasn't easy. They beat Wasco 3-1. So excited to talk to him. He's a great guy. Had some good text messages going back and forth with him. So excited to talk to him. That's going to be around 10:40. At the top of hour number two, a very special young man is coming on the show. Lucas Kircher is his name. He's going to be joining me here at First String Sports. Lucas has been blind since birth, and he was on the swim team this year at Justin Garza. Our friends at 24 and 47 did a very nice news segment on him, a sports segment, and highlight. It was about 3 minutes long. You guys can go back and watch that. That was really neat. But Lucas is an incredible young man. He's got a love of Star Wars as well, so I think we're going to be talking about that. And his swim coach has done an amazing job. Chris Steiner is going to be joining us as well. Has an aide, an academic aide, Matthew Bogie Bogard is his name. Excited to talk to him. So all three of them are going to be coming on at 11 o'clock. I'm sure you're going to be inspired by his story. I actually went through the teaching credential program with his mom, and as I've known about Lucas, I've met him once before this, known since birth. So just an incredible young man. I'm excited for you guys to hear about his story. At the bottom of hour number two, got some softball love. Division III champ Liberty Madera is coming in the house here for String Sports. Keith Davis is the coach. He's going to be joining me to talk about their run to the section title. Yesterday, they beat Pioneer Valley 12-6 at Margie Wright Diamond. So Ari Aguayo's coming on, Carly Jimenez, and Macy Webster, who was the starting pitcher in that game. So, yeah, some softball love. That's going to be around 11:30 or so. All right, so getting into the baseball championship games. We were able to broadcast one game out of the six at Valley Strong Ballpark down there in Visalia, California. And it worked out that Phil Bonatti and I broadcasted the Division II championship game between Ridgeview and Kingsburg. Now, if you guys remember on last week's show, we talked about the Kingsburg and Washington Union game. They ended up being a 1-0 win for the Vikings. Controversial call in the top of the seventh inning went against Washington Union, a play at the plate. And there was one in Clovis North, too, against Centennial. It seemed like those happened within a half an hour of each other. A lot of talk about that, a lot of stuff on social media. Were the runners out? Were they really safe? I mean, just tons of different angles and discussion and videos that were sent out there. But anyway, Ridgeview came in as the 5 seed. Kingsburg was the 2 seed. And Ridgeview comes away with a 2-0 win. It was a really well-pitched ball game, especially on the Ridgeview side, obviously. Joel Gutierrez, that dude was lights out for the Wolfpack. Pitched a complete game, 4-hitter with 11 strikeouts. We talk about uncomfortable at-bats, right? It's one of the jobs as the pitcher, make the batter uncomfortable. And Gutierrez did that all game. He could throw any pitch in any count. His off-speed stuff was really, really good. Did a good job of setting up the Kingsburg hitters. Gavin Akizian for Kingsburg started the game. If you remember last year, he threw a complete game shutout against Fowler to win the D3 championship. Kingsburg had won 2 D3 titles in a row. He was going for a third in Division II. And there was a fateful inning where Ridgeview scored a couple runs. I think it was the fourth inning, led off with an infield single, bunted them over to second, and the throw went in the center field. So first and second with nobody out. There's one of those, you know, you show bunt, pull back and swing, and it was just a blooper that fell just beyond the third base, kind of like the outfield grass there, and got a sack fly, and then another bunt, was able to score a runner, and they made those 2 runs stand up. So congrats to Ridgeview for winning their first Central Section title in baseball history. Jensen Hirschhorn, who we thought might start the game because he threw the Friday before that against Washington Union, did throw 105 pitches. He came in and struck out 4 of the last 5 hitters, but by that time, Ridgeview had already scored a couple runs, and Kingsburg just couldn't push any runs across. Had a couple opportunities. There was one controversial call in that game. Bottom of the sixth inning, runners are first and second with 2 outs, and a hitter struck out, and the ball was in the dirt and got away from the catcher a little bit, not too far. Catcher made a throw to first and hit Akizian, hit him in the back. And Kingsburg thought they were going to get bases loaded with 2 outs. But the home plate umpire called runner interference on the throw, which surprised a lot of people. I didn't see him make an effort to get in front of the throw. Like, he's just running straight to first. But, hey, it is what it is. Congrats again to Ridgeview on winning a D2 Central Section title. I mentioned the Lemoore score, beating Wasco 3-1. And Fowler, how about these guys? They beat Morro Bay in Division 3, 10-1. They jumped all over the Morro Bay pitcher. Congrats to Coach Bill Fever on winning another baseball title. He's been there for a long time, won a couple as a player, now a bunch as a coach. They started off the game 3-0. First three hitters got on it, and they didn't waste any time. They hit the first pitch on all three at-bats. So they jumped out to a huge lead and coached to win. Bubba Smith, who was on the show last week, was nails. Pitched a complete game, only allowed one earned run. So congrats to Fowler on winning another Central Section championship. Before the Kingsburg and Ridgeview. Kingsview, oh my gosh. That's where I used to work. That was a group home in Reedley. Corcoran defeated Shafter 18-6. I showed up at that game, and it was 10-6. Corcoran scored 8 runs in consecutive innings in the 4th and the 5th inning. That game ended in a 10-run rule. So congrats to Corcoran. They have a freshman pitcher that threw. And he looked really good, so he's going to be around for a while. Two more games today at Valley Strong Ballpark in Visalia in D6. Torres and Mendota is going to be playing. That's going to start at 12 o'clock. And then the D1 game, 6 o'clock, scheduled for 6 o'clock. Number 5, St. Joseph, and number 6, Centennial. Centennial beat Clovis North last week. St. Joseph beat Buchanan. Both games they won on the road. To beat the 1 seed and beat the 2 seed. And if I was a betting man, I would have bet pretty darn heavily that one of the Clovis Unified schools, either Buchanan or Clovis North, was going to make it to the championship game, but neither did. The Knights and the Golden Hawks say, nope, we're going to take care of business. So they're going to be facing off today or tonight for the D1 championship. And we know what Centennial did a couple years ago. Man, those guys just have the mojo. They got it going on down there. They beat Buchanan. They upset Buchanan in 2023. Stunned them with that 3-run home run in the top of the 7th inning. So they're gunning for their 2nd in 3 years. All right, the softball championships at Fresno State. 2 games for 3 days. In D6, Torres beat Roosevelt 16-9. In D5, Orcutt Academy defeated Dos Palos 3-0. In D4, Woodlake, only 1 loss on the year. Got a really good team this year. Reminds me of the Woodlake softball teams from the 80s. Defeated Kalinga 8-1. In D3, Liberty Madera 12, Pioneer Valley 6. We're going to hear from them around 11:30. A couple games today. So in Bakersfield Christian and Menasche for the D2 title. And then the big one, the rematch from track. Clovis North, a couple track schools, right? Clovis North and Buchanan, they are going to be playing for the softball championship, not the baseball championship, the softball championship. Buchanan upset number 1 Central. They're going to be playing for a title. I didn't write down the time. I assume 6 o'clock on that one. I could double check. But, yeah, Clovis North, Buchanan, that's going to be a big one tonight. So we're guaranteed a Clovis school is going to win a softball championship. All right, so I mentioned the storylines that are happening at Veterans Memorial Stadium. Yesterday, Friday, were the prelim events. Today are all the finals. Just a great event. It's one of my favorites to cover. Fortunately, I won't be able to go check out anything today. McKay Madsen is going for a double winner again. So last year, we know what he did with the shot put and the discus. The dude is defending his title. He's the leader in both. In both categories this year. It'll take a huge upset for him to lose. Rooting for McKay. I know Central has some good sprints as well. Buchanan has some distant runners on the girls' side, so keeping an eye on all that. Going to talk a little bit more about the Central's, the CIF State track and field after the break. But I do want to mention that Thursday night, right? I teased it a little bit. We had our student athletes of the week, all culminating at the field house, and we announced some student athletes of the year. Phil Bonatti again did a fantastic job gathering information about each student athlete, sending out blurbs to the people that voted. 33 total. 23 came to the event with their families. It was a better event than I had anticipated. It was really, really cool. We honored each student athlete. They got a plaque, and they each got, which was a huge surprise to them. They didn't know this was coming. I didn't know until I got there. They each got $300 just for being a student athlete of the week. $300, and that's from the collective from Bulldog Bread. So thanks to them for pouring into the student athletes. McKay Madsen was named the male student athlete of the year. And then Alexis Willis from Clovis West, who's headed to UNLV, she was a recipient on the girls' side. They got an iPad, this really cool trophy, and a check for $1,500. That's a nice payday for them. So congrats to everybody that was at the event and those student athletes that were honored as well. All right, we'll take a break. We're going to talk a little bit more about some news and notes going on in the Central Valley. You're listening to it on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that music used to make me smile. And I knew if I had
come back to Central Valley Sports Report,
that I could make those people dance. And
I wondered if that was the Weird Al Yankovic version of that song. Because there's a Star Wars version of that song. I think it's called Anakin. Yeah, that's pretty wild. All right, Tanvir producing this show today. I've thought about this next topic for a little bit, exactly how I'm going to frame it, what I'm going to say. And, you know, everybody that's tuned in to what's going on in the sports world, heck, it doesn't even have to be high school sports, because this has made national news. A lot of it's focused on the CIF State Track and Field Championships are going on at Veterans Memorial Stadium. You know, the controversy that's going on with a transgender male that is performing in the female categories. A.B. Hernandez is this person's name, and entered the long jump, the high jump, and the triple jump. And it's gotten a lot of attention, and one of the main reasons why is because Donald Trump. And Donald Trump likes social media and likes making posts and making waves as well. And he certainly did in posting about this certain situation that's going on here in the state of California. And his statement was, you know, that this is wrong. This should not happen. And he called on the local leaders to make some changes. So what happens? Just a few hours later, the CIF made a statement, and they said that if any biological female was left out of the state meet, that biological female then could enter and participate in the event. And then they came out with a statement on May 28th as well, that said that if necessary in the high jump, triple jump, and long jump, I'm reading straight from their media release, qualifying events at the 2025 CIF State Track and Field Championships, a biological female student athlete who would have earned the next qualifying mark will also advance to the final. Additionally, if necessary, in the high jump, triple jump, and long jump events at the 2025 CIF State Track and Field Championships, a biological female student athlete who would have earned a specific placement on the podium will also be awarded the medal for that place, and the results will be reflected in the recording of the event. The CIF values all of our student athletes and will continue to uphold our mission of providing students with the opportunity to belong, connect, and compete while complying with California law and education code. We now turn our attention to the over 1,500 student athletes participating in the 2025 CIF State Track and Field Championship. So, tricky to be sure. Protests. There was an airplane that had a banner that was circling the event yesterday. I heard there was a physical scuffle. So that stuff, right? That stuff's no good. I mean, that's just the ugly part of it, the physical nature of it. So that's what it's become. And I really just like to focus on the great student athletes that are participating in the event. You know, CIF came out and said 1,533 student athletes. I mean, that's a lot of student athletes. Whatever side you're on this topic, right? It's definitely a heated topic, and it's now come to the national attention. So, there's going to be lots of changes. There's going to be three different winners if AB Hernandez gets a medal. So if a girl gets second place, they're going to be awarded a first place if she gets beat out by AB Hernandez. So lots of changes. This topic certainly isn't going away. It's definitely a hot topic. So yeah, that's just a little bit of recap about what's going on there. I'm sure a lot of you guys are well aware of the situation. All right, a couple things I want to chat about. A couple news and notes in the baseball world. Ryan Smith, the baseball coach at Clovis East, who's been a friend of the show, just a great guy. He's a Buchanan grad, won a D2 championship a couple years ago. He stepped away from coaching baseball. Sent me a text. He actually put out something on social media that explained it. He's got a young family, and he wants to be there for his young family. You only get one shot at this at that age, and he's like, man, this coaching stuff is certainly a grind, and I don't want to miss my daughter's events and miss this time growing up because coaching takes a lot away. So Ryan Smith, again, one of the good guys in the Central Section, has stepped away. And Derek Kuhn, who built a little bit of a dynasty for a while, he stepped away too. He was Liberty Madera coach, won back-to-back Central Section titles in 23 and 24. He is now going into an administration role. He's like, I think I could really serve these kids in more of an administration role. So he's stepping away from coaching. That surprised me a little bit because he's a young guy. I think he was the youngest Central Section coach to win a Valley title a couple years ago. Super young guy. I thought, man, he might, be a contender to coach one of the Clovis Unified schools. Coach Kuhn is stepping away from coaching as well. A couple other fun things that I was able to discover a few weeks ago. You guys remember Connor Brogdon, speaking of Liberty Madera. He's a Liberty Madera grad, pitched at Fresno City College, pro baseball player, a pitcher. He got a World Series ring a couple weeks ago from the Los Angeles Dodgers. You guys know how he got it? He pitched one inning last year. And that one inning, he actually didn't do too well. It was against the Twins. It was in an April game. He gave up two home runs, but did get the final three outs for Los Angeles. Only pitched the one inning and got himself a World Series ring. That's pretty wild. And there's a picture of Connor showing it off. So, congrats to him. World Series champ forever. And I had no idea about this situation with the Baltimore Orioles. Obviously, they went through a managerial change a couple weeks ago. But Tony Mancelino took over the team. And I saw that, and I'm like, okay, cool, right? Orioles are not playing good baseball. They needed a change. But he's a Buchanan grad. 2001. Started out at Clovis High, then transferred after his freshman year. Played for Greg Funk, and then Tom Donald came in. Ended up being drafted by the Pirates. He's got a strong reputation in his game. His dad was a big league manager as well. His dad's name was Doug. Coached for various MLB teams from 92 to 07. But, yeah, check it out, man. New Baltimore Orioles coach is a Buchanan grad. Good stuff. And Justin Wilson, that name rings true. Another Buchanan grad. Fresno State legend. Part of the 2008 championship team. That guy's still pumping it from the left side. He's pitching for the Red Sox this year. He's thrown 16 innings. Has a 2.25 ERA. So, yeah, he's still hanging on. Missed all of, I think, 2 years ago. Missed a whole year and a half, actually, with the elbow injury. But is coming back strong. And Alec Gamboa, another local kid, who's a superstar athlete at Madera High. Pitched at Fresno City College. He was in the Dodgers organization. I thought the Dodgers were going to bring him up at the end of last year, especially when they expanded the 40-man roster. Left-handed pitcher, had some good numbers in the minors, but he signed with the Korean team. He's getting $300,000 guaranteed. So he's like, man, the time is short to make my money. Dodgers weren't going to call him up. So he's like, I'm going to go play in Korea. Signed by a Giants team. Has a $100,000 buyout, but he's already there. They liked what they saw in the minors. He's a team first dude. That's what they said in their press release. So Alec Gamboa, pitching career, good for him. One last thing before we take a break, and we bring in Lemoore coach John Freitas. The Buchanan boys volleyball played in the state championship last night against Modern Day at Fresno City College. It was supposed to be Saturday. Modern Day had graduation today, so they moved it to last night. And Buchanan won the first match, but then fell in four sets. Congrats to those guys, man. That's pretty darn awesome. They were the 5 seed, I believe, in the Central Section playoffs. Upset number one Clovis, made it to the championship game before they lost to Clovis East, but they made it all the way to the D2 state championship, but fell. But congrats to them. John Jay is a great guy, great coach, so good job by them. We're going to take a break for about 5 minutes. I'm going to bring on John Freitas. Excited to talk to him. His Lemoore Tigers won the first baseball title in school history. Went through some adversity this year, and John came in and took over, and they won the whole darn thing in Visalia a few days ago. All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to bring on John just a second on 1430 ESPN. Into this conversation, baseball coach at Lemoore. They defeated Wasco 3-1 to capture the D4 title on Wednesday, the first baseball title in school history. Excited to talk to John here. So, hey, thanks for joining us, man. A little technical glitch, but we are good to go. How you doing?
Hey, Paul, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic. All right, so it's been 3 days. It's Saturday. 3 full days, I guess you can say. What's been spinning through your head these last few days? Like, man, did that just happen? Are you just kind of floating on cloud nine? I know you really, are a student-orientated coach and athletic director as well. Like, what's been going through your mind these last few days?
Yeah, you just kind of realize that's just a core memory that all of this team will share, and just to cement their place in school history by becoming the first team to actually win a section title is pretty special. You know, there's a buzz around campus, seeing the boys wear their hats, and just so many people proud of them and what they were able to accomplish this year. There's been a lot of former greats reach out, not only to myself, our coaching staff, and our kids too. We had my coach in high school, Bob Clement, was there. Doc Ewing, just so many LHS greats there to support. And so this one wasn't just us. It was for the entire town and in our community. It's pretty special.
And a lot of times these championship games are on a Friday or a Saturday, so they don't have school the next day after winning a championship most of these times. But I'm glad you mentioned that these kids are coming back to school, probably got finals coming up as well, and wearing their hats and is with their chest probably puffed up a little bit prouder. Is that just kind of the vibe that's going on campus?
Yeah, absolutely. Yesterday was the last day for our seniors. And so a lot of the end of year shenanigans that go on, they're out signing their books outside the class and stuff. So they all just kind of came by my office and just reflecting on the game. We watched last couple innings of the game on the NFHS network in my office. And yesterday they wanted to get together as a team and watch it. And in the war room, we call it, that's where we met before all the playoff games. And this went over our plan of attack, but they sat in there and just joked and laughed and just had a good time really reflecting and enjoying. So it was pretty neat.
And I definitely want to get into the game in just a second, but let's talk about pregame and the week leading up to it. With the format this year, with the semifinal games happening on a Friday, and they got to wait, a few more days. Your game was on Wednesday, so you didn't have to wait as long as the teams that are yesterday and today. But what was kind of the message to the team leading up to the championship game? Where was it a big rah-rah moment? You're like, hey, you guys could make history. You could become the first baseball team in Lemoore history to win a section championship. Or was it just like, hey, right, we're here. Let's just play our game of baseball and win this thing.
Yeah, the funny thing is we felt like we did everything in our power to prep the boys leading up to each game prior to. So really, they went out and executed the game plan to a T almost flawlessly throughout the playoffs. We put together keys to victory each week. That's something we kind of did towards the later half of the season. And throughout the playoffs, we really got detailed scouting reports on each team. You know, now with all these tools, technology, we have Game Changer, Max Prep Stats, all of these things. I mean, our coaching staff, even the boys, worked tirelessly leading up to just watching games on kids, picking up tendencies. We tried to attack kinks in the armor for each team defensively. And so we felt we best prepared our boys each week. And so we put together the keys to victory. And they did a phenomenal job. So some of them leading up to, we really talked about having a hunter's mindset, staying present and focused. We knew how they would handle the time between each pitch was going to be the most important part as we got on the big stage. So we really talked to them about recognizing, releasing, and refocusing. So we told them, remember your ABCs. So acknowledge the pressure. We talked to them about pressure being a privilege. You know, obviously being able to bring home the first title in school history was going to be important to them and everybody else. So we wanted them to really acknowledge that pressure was a privilege. And we kind of had, you know, boys joking throughout the week, saying that out loud and yelling and having fun with it because, you know, it's a fun group. So it was cool to see. So the next one was breathe. We told them inhale confidence, exhale doubt. And we actually showed in the war room, we pulled up a picture of the scoreboard at Valley Strong, and we showed them the V on Valley. That was going to be our visual anchor for them to get outside themselves when the game starts speeding up on them. Told them to connect their eyes to the V, remember our keys to victory, and just focus on their breathing. And then part of the refocusing, we talked about their self-talk, to be able to have either just one word or a series of words. So we told them compete with confidence to be their self-talk. And we talked to them about their body moves differently when they're confident. So we told them to really focus on that. And so, you know, at first when you start talking about teenage boys about this kind of stuff, how they're handling time between pitches, you know, there were times where they're just telling me, shut up, coach, we just want to go play. So we told them at practice that week, even with their swings, just focus on the exhale part of your breath on your swing, staying loose and relaxed, and just told them, you know, it's not, it may not be important to you now, but there's going to be a time in this game coming up when you're going to need this tool. So we want you to practice it now. And so they did a good job. Other than that, really the hitting, we just talked about controlled aggression and plate discipline, staying aggressive early, getting their swings off, their best swings off in leverage counts, and then battling for the team with two strikes. So our hitters knew they had two opportunities to do damage. Once they got to that final strike, that was now the team at bat, and they had a battle for their brothers. They did a great job with that. Our pitchers, two out of three strikes, talked to them the importance of pitching to the zone, pitching to contact, letting the defense work behind them. Our pitchers were lights out throughout the playoffs. I mean, we only allowed two runs, and so we had some good defensive play behind them. And Ian Snell and Nick Johnson both were lights out, so that was good. The other one was leadoff man on, leadoff man out. So we talked about offensively, if we get the leadoff guy on, that was going to equate to runs. And then we also talked about our pitchers and defense getting the leadoff guy out. But the most important key to victory, and this is something we really harped on ever since the last Hanford game, because we knew how hard it is to keep seniors engaged this time of year. They're looking forward to the next chapter in their life, moving on. We just talked to them to really enjoy and get entrenched in every moment and be present and focused and to battle for each other until the final out. And this team did. These boys, they played like family every pitch, every single inning. And we feel like that was probably the biggest deciding factor in us being able to win it all.
Absolutely. And just for reference, too, you mentioned only giving up two runs in those four games. So you beat Santa Ynez in round one, 4-0, then took care of Foothill 10-1, and then Hanford West 2-0, and then the 3-1 win over Wasco. Just so walk us through the championship game. So obviously they were well prepared. You guys put together a fantastic game plan. You guys found yourself down 1-0, but you get something woke up in that sixth inning. What just kind of describe and just walk us through the game a little bit.
Well, I mean, as a coach, there were moments where I caught myself failing to breathe in the dugout. Felt like I was getting lightheaded just because of the stress and everything that comes on. But honestly, with this group, I don't think anybody had a doubt of if it was going to happen. I just think everybody was wanting to know when. You tip your hats to Wasco that first inning. They came out swinging the bats. They put together consecutive ABs that nobody else has been able to do throughout the playoffs and really all season long against Turtle. And so we knew once he worked out of that jam and minimized the damage, only allowing one run with bases loaded, we knew we were in good shape, and that was most likely going to come back to haunt them. He was lights out. And we had opportunities throughout. If you were there, if you watched the game, we had a couple situations, first and third, one out, line drive back to the pitcher, double play, little things, little base running miscues that kept us at bay. But that sixth inning was pretty special. Tristan Pugar, I can't say enough about that kid. He single-handedly shut down the run game against them. And I think he threw two runners out trying to steal and backpick the kid at first. And we had another guy hung out to dry early on. We just tried to apply the tag too early. But leadoff double in the sixth, we knew that run was going to score. Tyson Kinter behind him, it's a guy that could swing the bat well, and he could also bunt well for a bigger guy. He laid down a beautiful bunt. Kid made a great play, but we got the runner at third, less than two outs. Drake Varela comes up. That kid has been Mr. Clutch for us throughout the entire year, but most importantly, the playoffs and championship innings, the sixth, seventh inning, that's a kid you want to swing the bat. And delivered RBI single to left. After that, he steals second. You have Nick Johnson come up with the clutch AB. That kid's been lights out for us on the bump and also at the dish. So, I mean, that ended up being the game-winning hit. He singles up the middle to score Drake. And we knew with Nick coming in late innings, we probably only needed one, but it's always reassuring to have that extra insurance run. So we were able to manufacture one more great pinch hit at bat by AJ Swan. So he drove in a run at third. They weren't able to turn two on that play when he hit the ball to short. The kid kind of double clutched. So we knew 3-1 lead going in the top of the seventh. I mean, that's with Nick Johnson on the bump. We really liked our chances.
And you guys then celebrated after that. We only got 3 minutes more with you, Coach. Love this conversation. Talking with John Freitas. His Lemoore Tigers won the first baseball title in Central Section history. All right, so is it true your guy, Ian Snell, in the first inning, would he chop a ball back into his chin at the plate and needed some stitches? I saw a picture of this Band-Aid on his chin. What's going on with that guy?
Yeah, he did. So hanging curveball, turned in late. As a coach, ultimate fear was his future in the game. If that's an orbital bone, that's a different conversation. But laid there, and then once he stood up and I saw a blood on his chin, I knew the type of kid and competitor he was. There's no way he's going to let us take him out of that game. So we our trainer did a great job bandaging him up. We had Doc Ewing in our dugout. Looking at him as well. So once they got him stitched up, he went out there and ran, and just the roar from the crowd, you know, that was kind of a pivotal moment in the game early on. So, and he got in a groove after that and settled in.
I think he needed six stitches, right, after the game. Is that true?
He got seven. So we went and celebrated with In-N-Out after, and his mom picked him up and took him right to the walk-in clinic or emergency room and got him stitched up. So, yeah, that's correct. And that was a stat we highlighted at the banquet.
That's awesome.
Night, the seven stitches.
Maybe that could be an award, right? The seven stitch award you could give every year to the most inspirational player or something like that. All right. Coach.
Right.
I'm just curious about the historic moment more. You know, I talked about the great athletes that have come through Lemoore, but winning a baseball title for the school, like what does that mean to the community and to you, especially being a Lemoore grad?
It's words can't describe how special it is to be a part of this. I just couldn't imagine this ever unfolding the way it did. So many Lemoore greats have reached out to me, a lot of former teammates. So I was a part of the 95 team We lost to Clovis High 3-1 in the section finals. And so I kind of shared my story and some of that with our kids, just talking how things have changed. You know, back then you really had to win league to go to playoffs. Maybe a second place team might slide their way in. And then once you got there, you had to compete with all the big schools. So yeah. It wasn't as easy as it is now, because some of them had a hard time believing with some of the former athletes and Tiger greats that we've had, especially Diamond Sport athletes, that we haven't won a title yet. And so I tried to explain to them how things have changed. But, you know, it's part of a fraternity, being a Tiger and having everybody in your corner cheering you on, supporting you. And then when you start thinking about all the greats, a lot of them have reached out. You know, David Osbury and I stay in contact, always texting. He's been a great help and mentor for a lot of our kids. So just hearing him reach out, and, you know, Lorenzo, Tommy, Jones, Charlie Jones, all of those greats I stay in contact with. They come to our game. So it's special for everybody.
Absolutely. All right. Great story. I wish we had more time to talk, Coach Freitas. Congratulations, man. And when you get those rings all dialed in, why don't you send me a picture so I could check those out?
Absolutely. Will do. Sorry, I got a little bit long-winded on some of those questions.
No, I love it. So, again, congratulations. Really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Paul, for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. All right, we're going to take a break here. We're going to bring on Lucas Kircher and a couple of his swim coaches at Justin Garza High School. I can't wait for you guys to hear this inspirational story. You're listening to it on 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome to hour number two of the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. I'm your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports on Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. I do my show for the Letterman's Jacket Room off to the right-hand side. If you miss any part of the show, you can go to 1430ESPNFresno.com under podcasts, Central Valley Sports Report. Boom, they're all right there. You can listen to past episodes. You can listen to, you know, a segment that you didn't hear earlier. So, we got one more hour of high school news to bring with you. But I mentioned in my opener that we have a very special guest here today, Lucas Kircher, freshman, member of the Justin Garza swim team. He's been blind from birth. Swim coach Matthew Bogart, Bogey as they call him, and Lucas's aide, Chris Steiner, is here as well. Channel 2447 did an incredible segment about a month ago that came out, and I saw that segment. I'm like, oh, my gosh, I got to try to have Lucas on the show. So I contacted Mom, and here we are. We're going to hear from Lucas and these wonderful men that have breathed life into him. And he's also a huge Star Wars fan as well. And so when I talked to him a little bit before coming on, I said, what do you want to talk about the most on the show? He said, oh, I'll be fine talking about Star Wars entire segment, which I'm sure we could, but we got to talk about swim and all the good stuff that you went through this year. So first of all, how are you guys doing this morning? Thanks for coming in.
Good.
Pretty good.
The weather, how is that going to be impacting you guys, man? 103 degrees today. Are we ready for this weather or not? What do you guys think?
No. It's very bright outside, and yeah.
How does the weather, like when you get into the hundreds, does it affect anything swim-wise for you guys as coaches?
Well, it's actually easier to get out of the water.
Yeah?
Because, you know, we swim a lot during winter, and so it's fine when you're in the pool, and then you get out of the pool and you're just freezing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe it. All right. So, Lucas, I want to ask you about school. So you just – when is school over exactly? Do you know when the last days are?
Thursday, June 12th, I think.
So you just completed your freshman year, right?
Yeah, in like a couple weeks.
In a couple weeks. So what were some of your favorite classes that you've taken this last year?
Spanish has been extremely interesting because I've never – like my on my mom's side – they speak Spanish a lot, and I have no idea at all what they're saying. So it's good to at least learn a little bit. And when I do hear something that they say, which is not in the middle of their very, very, very fast speeches, then I feel happy with myself.
Because you know at least the gist of what they're saying, right? You could understand a little bit.
Yeah, I could understand like two words.
What are some of your favorite phrases that you've learned?
Yo estoy muy, muy, muy cansado.
All right, so what's a class that you're like, oh, my gosh, I can't stand this class right now. I'm having a difficult time. Is there a class that you do not look forward to?
I'd say math is definitely the hardest. Somehow I do have an A. Somehow I managed to get that. I've never gotten an A in math before. That was really cool.
That's awesome. All right, we're going to hear from Lucas about swimming in just a second. I'll start with you, Bogey. Like, when did you first meet Lucas or hear about Lucas and introduce him? What were your first thoughts about this young man?
So I believe it started through email. It was early of last year. So I think we started the conversation in January. And we were just preparing things, just making sure we were ready to go as soon as he came on deck. I didn't meet Lucas until the first time he showed up to practice. So he showed up. That was about 15 months ago. He showed up. He got in the pool, and we got started.
What were your first impressions? Like, oh, this is an exceptional young man. I can't wait to work with him. This is going to be just a fantastic opportunity for him.
I mean, Lucas is an incredible kid, in and out of the water. So he's encouraging to us and his teammates. Just the guts to get out there and try it. He has to put a lot of trust in us to make sure we are getting him in the right direction and letting him know when the walls are. So the confidence to try something new and join the team.
Chris, what about for you? When did you first meet Lucas or hear about him wanting to join the swim team?
Well, I first met Lucas at North Point Church. I volunteer there. They had a Special Stars program, which is, you know, you work with kids who need a little more assistance and stuff like that. And we bonded right away over Star Wars, of course.
And you're wearing a Darth Vader shirt.
Yeah, I'm a
did that on purpose.
I'm a huge Star Wars fan also. So I think it was really good that happened first because we built a bond. I got to meet his parents, and they got to see what I was like, you know, as a person. So when it came time to I started working with him at Rio Vista Middle School as an official aide, and my kids are all in swim. My girls both played water polo and did swim. My son's starting water polo. And I knew a blind student in high school because I used to coach Special Olympics in Stockton, California, under Floyd Bonet of Northern California Special Olympics. And so I just knew it was something that was accessible. So I presented it to him, and I was like, hey, is this something you'd be interested in? And this was like his seventh grade year. By the time I got to Bogey, it was kind of already late in the season. And there's a lot of things you got to work out, logistics, and you got to get approval. But we stayed in touch. And he also coached my daughter in dive, which was really cool. So we had a bit of a relationship. So when eighth grade rolled around, got the ball rolling early, talked to Bogey. He's really humble. Like, he just says, oh, yeah, this. And he did so much. He went out. There are things that we needed, like protective mats and you know, so he helped me with all that. Like, he looked into things. He was very instrumental. I also want to mention Teresa Bollier, who, amazing person. She helped us get the tapper poles, which are what we use to let him know he's getting close to the wall so he doesn't hit his head. And, you know, it was a huge team effort. We all came together, and we made it happen. And the person who did the most, though, was this kid. Just the courage it takes to hop in there. You don't see where you're going. You're swimming headfirst into a wall, trusting those around you to kind of watch out for you and do what you do. And the practices aren't easy. We pushed this kid, like, we had him do a 500 this year, which he was terrified of. So yeah, he just, a lot of it's him.
So Lucas, when did you first realize that you could be a swimmer? Who approached you, said, hey, would you like to try this out? What did that look like for you?
So I have a pool at my house. My dad taught me in like 30 minutes how to tread water, how to like get across it when I was like seven, but I never really knew how to like swim like the strokes. It wasn't until like Chris really asked me that I really thought about it, because I always put it like I never actually thought I would ever be in a sport. I never thought I would ever just have the chance or even be good enough to do it. But he asked me, I in a split decision said, yeah, why not? And that was definitely one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life.
What was going through your mind, or what were you feeling at that first practice when you jumped into the pool? What was going through your mind during that time?
Absolute, utter, a huge amount of terror. It was a completely new experience. Like, I thought that it would be like the pool at my house where I could swim across in like six strokes. Nah, I swam across that. Even getting to the other end, I got across it. I was breathing so hard.
Was it colder than you thought?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was good with the water until getting out. Getting out was that still comes in my nightmares. That terrifying experience.
I mean, did you hit bottom? Or, I mean, how deep was the pool when you first jumped to it? Was it the 10-foot pool? Do you guys even remember?
It was the second lane at the east pool.
Yes.
So it was about 7.
Yeah, it wasn't that deep.
Did we start in that pool?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, when you first got in, it was in a deep pool, just to see where we're at. We adjusted that. We have at both our complexes, we have shallow area. So we moved to the activity pool so we could work on more technique and be able to communicate, because that pool you can walk alongside and we can give feedback as he went.
All right, so talk about the modifications that you guys mentioned that you had to use with Lucas. You talked about the touch pole. Is that what you called it?
Tapper pole. Yeah.
Tapper pole. Just let everybody know out there exactly how you guys are able to guide Lucas through swimming.
Let me take that. So we have two primary things that we use. One is the tapper pole. I'm at one end of the pool and Bogey's at the other. It's, you know, I think the one we have now is about 7 feet long.
Is it real quick, 50-foot pool? You guys go 50?
25 yards.
25, okay.
Yeah.
25 yards, got it.
And so we just kind of started as far out, like what we thought was totally safe. And as he picked up speed, we just slowly worked him closer to the edge, working on where we tap him so he can get a good flip and push. Just took time and practice. The other thing we use is it is a communicator that works underwater by vibrating his skull. So I have like a normal walkie-talkie, and it sits under his cap on the back of his head, so I can actually talk to him even if it's underwater. And that's mostly just to keep him straight. We're still working on getting a perfectly straight run. He still goes a little side to side, improving every day. But and then we also, just for practice, not during meets, we have mats that we put at the end. So that he can just go full speed and know he's going to hit that before he gets to the wall.
Yeah, I was concerned about that, right? Like, you don't want him hitting his head or getting injured in a situation like that. All right, so Lucas, all right, first Star Wars comment for me is, like, did you feel like Lobot, right? Lobot having the sensor on your head.
Kind of. Honestly, I didn't even know it was bone conducting. I genuinely... I never even thought about the whole science behind it, because when my head went underwater, I heard that radio for the first time. It took Chris to actually explain it to me, because like he asked me like what it sounded like, and I had to, because it sounded like kind of like a phone call on one of them rotary phones, like the landline ones. And apparently, because he told me it was bone conducting, and I heard of that technology before. I just never used it,
and so now you're part of it.
Like Lobot.
Yeah, so Lobot is a Star Wars character, right, that has this robotic thing on his head that's able to communicate with. All right, so Lucas, when your first event, do you remember your first event where you competed against other swimmers from other schools?
50 free, I think. Was it at Fowler, or was it? It was at another school. It was like April or something, like after spring break of 8th grade. But I remember it was a 50 free.
Were you nervous before that event?
Oh, yeah. I was shaking. Like that. I was way more nervous than my first practice, because okay, I've only done a month of practice, but am I going to make it? Will I be good enough? I did okay. I did like a 51.
Is that your favorite event, doing the 50 free? Or I saw you doing some backstroke,
yeah,
right?
That's my favorite event, the backstroke. I love the backstroke because I can breathe.
That's right. You're above water.
Heads up out of the water, yeah.
So describe Lucas's coaches. Describe, like, his first event and – right, like how those go with him, and how you guys prepare him for meets.
So I believe his first event in junior high was at Madera South. We had missed like the first two or three meets because we were still getting him ready, and I had promised mom I wasn't going to let him swim in a meet till we were dialed in. So when I felt ready, and she totally trusted. It took a huge amount of faith on her part. So when I did finally say, "Hey, he's ready," she came out to his first meet. And I think one of the things that stick out to me the most, and it'll stick out to me forever, like what makes this great, was actually her reaction to his first meet. He came in third out of like eight, had a great time. Like, it was his best time he'd done yet. He said the adrenaline was pumping, and he just did amazing. And I just, that's what makes that day stick out to me, is just mom seeing Lucas crush something that they hadn't even thought of before up until that moment. And man, that was amazing.
Bogey, what was that? What was that like for you to see Lucas finish third in out of eight?
It was really cool. Being at that pool, one of my mentors is a coach there, and he'd been helping me out as far as training, getting him to that point. But it is a little nerve-wracking for us because there is a lot of trust there, and being the first time in a meet using the tappers, making sure. It just goes smoothly. So don't let us take anything away from that swim, just putting him in a position to succeed.
Lucas, what's been the biggest adjustment, or maybe something that's been difficult for you while you're in the pool that like, man, I got to overcome this? What's something that you've really strive to improve in?
I feel like I've improved, but I definitely haven't overcome the fear because – like the tapper pulls I'm pretty good with because when I swim across it and he taps me, but I was always afraid of crashing into the wall, which I may or may not have done a couple times. But the tapper pulls, right now I'm trying to overcome the absolute terror of diving off the block, which slowly, I wouldn't consider myself good, but kind of getting there, maybe.
Getting better at it. What, Lucas, what's been your proudest moment so far during this time of being on the swim team? What's something that you stood tall on?
I feel like there's a couple. I feel like the States one was really, really cool. I feel like that's the highest I've reached, but I feel like the CIF was also really cool because I really love just being there with the rest of the team. I feel like I really connected with them more. I really love that team. I love my team because just like a lot of people who have ever met me, they are questioning what to say or what to do because they don't want to offend me or anything, because like they never met a blind person before. But I feel like they really like warmed up to me and started treating me normal, and like they've become some of my some really good friends, and I'm really glad to have gone.
What are some really neat things that your teammates have said to you, or maybe even some swimmers that you've competed against? Has anybody come up to you and said, "Hey, good job out there"?
Tons of times. I'm pretty sure they definitely have all done that, and that's really legend. They've been some of my greatest supports in swim. I've tried my best to tell them good job when, because a couple months ago at a meet, Chris was describing one of my teammates doing a 500, and like how she was doing it and her time, and I was listening to it, and that was really cool because I feel like They've done and are still doing a really good job, and it gives me definitely some role models in swim, which I really want to be able to be almost as good as, even, because They're amazing.
What's been some of the hardest practices, Lucas, that you've gone through? I know your coaches are laughing about this right now, but have they really pushed you? You're like, what are these guys trying to do to me here?
You have no idea. So this one time, for like 3 hours, I practiced because I was sick for like 2 weeks, and after I didn't swim for like another week because eye doctor, and then I was still trying to get better, and I had to make up for all of that. That was a rather difficult thing. And then a shorter practice, which I had to do 2 500s because the next day I was doing that 500. I was not ready. No, not at all. That was terrifying. That 500 really, like, I was.
It took a lot out of you.
Days.
What's like your favorite food to eat after a meet or after a really big swim practice? Like, is there something you really like to grub out on?
Probably pizza. I mean, I love pizza either way, but I just love eating after. Even more than eating, I like just drinking stuff because I get really thirsty after because I'm tired. And I just go home and... Well, first of all, I go home and go to sleep. Then I wake up at 3 a.m., right in the kitchen, and then my brother gets mad at me because I drink all his Gatorade.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool.
That makes sense. All right. So, coaches, what are some feedback or some really neat moments that you have maybe with the community or with other coaches regarding Lucas?
So, kind of two instances. We went to the Clovis West invite. It's a big meet in our area. It was an awesome experience because they had the Paralympic freestyle. It was the first time he was swimming with other students within that specific event. But there's probably 600 kids there, and everything stopped. Every kid lined the outside of the pool. And the deafening cheers for the kids while they were racing, it was just an awesome experience there. And then at the state meet that he qualified for, the community, just how welcoming they brought us in, because some of them have been doing this for being a part of the Paralympic swimming for decades at this point, but they see us all often by ourselves and invited us to their camp. So there was probably at least a dozen students sitting together just chatting and laughing and complaining about warming up and all the things that all swimmers do.
Yeah.
It was hard.
But just that community, and it was great for me because I got to talk to other parents to see how they were training, how they designed their tapper poles. Every little bit of advice I'm going to take.
Chris, what about for you? What are you hearing from the community? What are some stories that people have told you?
One thing that's cool is just I've had people come up to me. There was one lady, she came up crying because she had a kid who had special needs, and she thought Lucas was my son, and she came up and said, "Oh, what you're doing with him is great." Like I have, and I was, and I was like, "Oh, well, I appreciate everything. Like, so happy for." But this is actually his mom, and so I was able to introduce them, and I saw them have a moment on the side where they could bond as mothers. That was really cool. The meets that he said were really special too, just to see the kids, right? Like, adults. We're older, we get it. But to see kids who are usually so like focused on themselves and their thing, to see them line up and them give and them do things and take Lucas in with them to, you know, participate and stuff, that's been what's really cool. Like the stuff I can see from the outside and watch him have those experiences have been pretty cool.
Lucas, you remember the state meet very well?
I do. It was like two weeks ago exactly.
Well, what do you remember from that experience? You remember hearing the crowd? You remember other participants? What do you remember most about?
It was, that thing was huge. It was like really, really cool. I met a few people, one who was blind like me, and it was really cool because they were all encouraging me. I was encouraging them because it was like a super special feeling because I felt like they've gone through something really similar to me. They've managed to get like the one blind person. He has like a 24-second PR. That's insane. Like he's a junior, and he's definitely gone through something like things similar to me in swim. So it's definitely like giving me more something to go after.
Do you remember where he's from? Is he from Central Valley?
I think his name was Nathaniel.
Yeah.
And I think he's from Clovis West. Great kid too. Came up, they did practice together, like warm ups. Right after was like complimenting Lucas and just it was such a cool experience, and for him to be out there doing it and setting such a good time was awesome because that gives Lucas like a goal, like, okay, this is where we want to be by that point in our swim career, because he knows it's a possibility now. So, yeah, that was a great opportunity for him to swim with Nathaniel.
So, Lucas, now that you've had all these experiences this year swimming for Justin Garza, talk about the goals. Do you have some time goals? Do you have some goals to place higher in the following years throughout your career? What's your mindset moving forward?
By senior year, I definitely want to get 25 seconds or over, at least like on a 50, and on 100, maybe like 40 or 50 something seconds. For the rest, like, I don't know, because I never really thought like super hard about if I'm going to do it in college. I actually might, because I never, like last year when I was asked, I didn't even know if I was going to do it the rest of my high school career. And I wasn't too sure about it, but this year really convinced me, so I am. So I feel like by my senior year, if it keeps going the same way, I probably will. So,
is that news to you guys? Are you guys hearing this for the first time, or do you guys know that? Yeah, that's what Lucas wants to do for his remaining high school career.
I'm gonna write those times down. I'm gonna put them up on the wall.
No,
I've always encouraged him to. With all of the swimmers, they need to be able to swim everything. So yes, everyone has their favorite events, but this year and following years broaden his swimming repertoire and help him achieve his goals.
Awesome. All right. So Lucas, this is probably the part of the interview that you're going to like the most. So I've been holding on to this question. I think you know where I'm going to go with this.
Probably do.
Yeah. We might have to put a time limit on this because I know you could probably talk about this for about 5 minutes, but who is your favorite Star Wars character and why?
Can I go into Legends?
Of course.
Ooh. I'm going to go with Darth Bane because...
You stole mine.
Hey, I told you about him before.
No,
like,
I told
right
you
when,
about
I don't know what you're talking about, young man. I'd say Darth Bane because I really like his... personality. He's extremely, extremely cunning. He's calculative, and he knows when to use his power. But he also, in the second book, Rule of Two, he gets his Orbalisk armor, and he finally shows some weakness, not in his power, but in the fact that he starts to lose control of his anger. Like, he starts to... he almost killed his apprentice, Xana, because he thought that she betrayed him. She betrayed him. So it was really cool listening to his weaknesses. And then Dynasty of Evil, going through some of his past that we got to hear about in Path of Destruction.
Well, I think you just described Darth Bane, the Rule of Two. You know, for us Star Wars guys, we exactly know what they're talking about. I think only... maybe 0.5% of the people listening understood what you said, but we know, right?
Yeah,
so we're
going
to be able to take that with us. All right, we only got a few minutes with everybody here. Again, thank you guys for coming on. This has been fantastic. I'm going to ask each of you guys, and we'll end with Lucas here. Like, how has Lucas inspired each of you with what he's been able to accomplish this last couple of years?
I can go first. His attitude is infectious. Either his teammates and us as coaches. This year, it just brought a love for the sport again. when you start doing this for years, you can get kind of stuck into a routine. But just as much as I challenge Lucas to get better, him being out here has challenged me to grow as a coach.
Chris?
So one thing that Lucas has really shown me is that, you know, I didn't see myself doing this when I started this journey with him, right? This is something I didn't see. And so I think what he's taught me is that we all have blind spots in life, even when we have sight. And we've got to be open to the things that we're not necessarily chasing in life that come about so that we make sure we give everything a try. We don't put limits on ourselves. We don't trap ourselves in a bubble and be like, okay, here's what's possible. Because there's other things all around us we don't see that could be a possibility. And when those opportunities arise, we got to take them and do what we can with them. And who knows where they'll take us.
All right, Lucas. If anybody out there is listening that might want to hear some inspirational words from you, how would you inspire others? What would you say to somebody that maybe isn't trying something that they can try, or maybe something that they need to get over in life? What's some inspiring words that you would like to say to people?
Whether you have a disability or not, there's going to be, like, I've heard this saying, which in my case is really, really true. You are your biggest critic. Whether you have a disability or not, I feel like your mind is probably going to, you're going to think that you can't do something, and then you're going to fear, you're going to get way too scared to even try. But I feel like if it's something that you, like, whether it's a sport, whether it's swim or wrestling or, I don't know, basketball, it doesn't even have to be a sport. But whatever it is, I feel like it's definitely worth trying. And because if you do, it could definitely be a life-changing moment to just say yes, to just say that you'll try it. And you don't even have to finish it. I feel like if you just try it, like when I tried swimming, I never had the thought of that I was going to do in my high school career. I never had that thought. But I tried it because Mr. Chris there he convinced me to do it. He's been definitely one of my biggest inspirations in my entire life. But I feel like if you try it and you love it, then that could be the biggest life-changing moment that you'll ever have.
Well, Lucas, I want to thank you and your mom and your support staff for coming in and sharing your story. It's amazing, and I'm sure people listening are inspired by what you've been able to accomplish in your life so far. And you got a lot of life to live. You got a lot of Star Wars audiobooks to listen to. So really appreciate you coming on, young man. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. And thank you to Bogey and Chris as well. Appreciate you guys.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to bring on Liberty Madera softball, who won themselves a Central Section Championship last night. You're listening to it on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. Sports Report. I hope you guys were able to listen to that conversation with Lucas Kircher, who has been blind since birth and was able to swim this year for Justin Garza. Inspirational story. I love it. So we got Liberty Madera softball in the house. They're the D3 Central Section champs last night at Fresno State. They beat Pioneer Valley, smashed them 12-6. They're the 5 seed. They are currently 22-8. We're joined by Coach Keith Davis, Ari Aguayo, Carly Jimenez, and Macy Webster. I got all that right?
Yes.
All right, good. All right, so first of all, thank you guys for coming on. So it's been about, not even, what, a little over 12 hours, 13 hours or so since you guys won a Central Section title. So how's everybody feeling, man? Is it just kind of like woke up floating on air? What's going through your mind?
Oh, it was amazing. We're still riding the high. Still so proud of these girls. Just thought about it all night, and yeah, it's just an amazing feeling.
Girls, so what was like running through your mind like this morning, even when you got on your Liberty Madera softball shirts and came to the show? Like, is it still kind of floating? Does it seem surreal?
Yeah, it's still surreal. It was really crazy. The energy there was amazing, and it was just something we've been working all year towards.
Girls, what about for you?
It was like a. It's a dream come true. I mean, working so hard I've worked so hard for it all my 4 years of high school, and just for it to come true, it makes me cry.
So how about last night, the celebration, right? I love celebrations after final outs or when the buzzer sounds in a championship game. How did you guys celebrate? Is somebody that you ran to right away hugging, right? Like, what? How did you guys celebrate on the field there?
I threw off my glove and my mask and ran straight to Macy.
Yeah, I threw my glove and ran straight to Macy and gave her a hug.
Why Macy?
She's the pitcher, and she's been
star
working
pitcher.
She's all year.
Yeah. Macy, what was going through? Oh, well, how did the game end? Did it end on a strikeout or a ground out pop up? How did it end?
Pop out to left field.
So yeah. When you saw the ball go to left field, obviously you got a pretty comfortable lead at 12-6. Like, you're like, oh my gosh, this is it. What was going through your mind?
Yeah, Saya made a pretty good catch. She was on the run and she caught it, and everyone just kind of went crazy. And I kind of threw my stuff, and then I just gave a hug to whoever was closest. Yeah.
Did you black out a little bit, or you remember everything?
I remember everything. Yeah, every little thing. If anything, at the beginning of the game, I was a little blacking out. I mean, I think the heat was getting to me, and then the nerves a little bit, especially like being on base a lot, like thinking, oh, am I going to steal or something? Like, my body was shaking a little bit, so.
You knew you were stealing every time.
Yes.
You guys stole a lot of bases. Like, you guys got some crazy stats I was able to look up. All right, so walk us through the game a little bit. So I think you came out swinging the bats. You got a 3-0 lead to start the game. I think they countered with one, and then you had a big 8-run inning.
No, they started the top of the first. We had two outs and okay. a play at first, and then they ended up getting one in the first. And I knew if we could just settle down, there was a long game, we can chip away and do whatever, but we answered right back with three. And then somewhere along the line, we got another one. Then it became 4-2. And then we had the big inning. We always talk about trying to have a big inning in a game. One big inning. And it happened. We just ran crazy. The girls, that was our game plan going in, was kind of be aggressive on the base path. And we always preach, if there's a bubble ball, let's go. And these girls executed every bit of our game plan. Every bit of the game plan. I couldn't be more proud.
So who clutched up in that big inning?
Oh, it was big. Even the bottom of the lineup, you know what I mean? They got on base. That's the whole key with the bottom of the lineup. And we have some speed down there. And if we can convert it back to the top of the lineup, then that's when we can do some things with runners on base. And so the bottom of the lineup was huge. They had some walks. And I can't remember who got all the hits in there because it was a big inning. But there was a couple bubble balls where we took two bases and the nerves had kind of ran off, and we played Liberty Hawk softball. That's what we preach. You know, we want bubble balls. Let's be aggressive. Let's not be tentative on the bases. Let's go.
Was that kind of your mentality, girls, going into the game? Like, hey, you guys put up a 12 spot at the end, but, like, what was your mentality going to the game? Like, we got to be aggressive. We just got to do our thing.
No matter what, our biggest thing is not to play scared. So, and I think we did a great job at not doing that.
Yeah, and we were looking for a one out at a time, not focusing too ahead of whatever was happening.
I want to go back a little bit because it wasn't easy. You guys are the 5 seed, right?
Yeah, yeah,
right. Pretty low 5 seed, right? Like, were you a little disappointed you got the 5, or did you kind of figure to get that?
I mean, with the playoffs, the way they go, we didn't know if we could be anywhere from low seed 2 to mid. I don't even try to figure out the Seahawks playoff thing. I just know wherever we land, we got one game ahead of us. One game, whoever that is. And the pitching that we went through in this playoff was a gauntlet. I mean, we got no hit and one on air. This whole thing has been bigger than us. We won on a 3-run home run in the top of the 7th. And we've always preached that. Like, it's bigger than us. Something's going on. And it's a team chemistry that we've talked about. This has been my funnest year coaching. I had some studs leave last year. It was a great year. We had a lot of talent. But this year, like, the chemistry with the team and them buying into kind of what we're preaching, it's rejuvenated me. And this was the reward of it all, in the type deal. Like, we got to experience the reward. But, yeah, the pitching that we faced all playoffs, man, they were high-level pitchers. And the girls kept making adjustments and adjustments. And I always say that's what this game's about.
You're talking about the Wasco game in round 2. That was the number 1 seed. You guys found yourself down 1-0 into the 7th inning. So who hit the bomb for
it
you
was,
guys?
What was the score?
It was
3-2.
3-2, okay.
Yeah, and we were down. We were at our 7-8-9. And the pitcher was good, and I had this little theory in my head, I don't know, I'm going to bunt these next two girls no matter what. And Sire got on a bunt, and then Ari, I don't know what all game they've been playing in her face, and I just kind of pointed to the third baseman. She was back at third base, laid down a bunt, and went off the first baseman's glove, and we're at second and third, two outs, 3-2 count. Everything you talk about as a kid, you know what I mean? Us guys talk about that stuff. 3-2 count, and Layla comes up, and she grooves the ball, and Layla just made her pay for it.
Full count.
I mean, it was just amazing. It's something that girl will remember for the rest of her life.
What was your guys' reaction on the bench when you saw the home run land?
I was on second base.
You were on second?
Yeah, and so I was signaling to her all of her pitcher or the pitcher's pitches because the catcher was setting up too early. And I was at second base, and I started praying. I literally started praying.
We had to calm Ari down in between innings. She was crying. She plays like a lot like I coach. There's just tons of passion. And I said, we got three outs. You got to gather yourself a little bit. And Webby came in and just
shut it down.
Like when do you feel like – I know you played in the big Buchanan tournament, right? So you're playing against the best competition in the Central Valley. Like when do you feel like – the confidence really hit you guys? Like, you know what I mean? Like, hey, we can come back in these games, and we know we can dominate points.
That's why I do this. I came to Liberty Ari's freshman year, and I had this theory. I want the big dogs. You know, we're going to get our butts kicked sometimes, but we're going to learn how to compete, and we're going to learn how to bounce back. And we've always, after that tournament, we always have like an internal warfare amongst the team because we feel like we're losing and we're doing this, but we're playing the number one schools. I mean, I faced almost every top pitcher in the Valley. And then we get them together, and we're prepared for anything that's ahead of us. And so I think the Buchanan tournament, Easter tournament, and the Central tournament are good for us and bad for us. But I'm going to put us against whoever, and we're going to learn how to fight. That's what I want us to do, is learn how to fight.
And you guys are going to have some rings for it, right?
We're going to have a ring for it. Yes, we are.
I got a ring for it. How about for you girls? Like, what was there maybe a special bonding moment throughout the year that you guys really came together, or maybe there was something on the field that happened? Is there one point in particular you can think of?
For me, it was a practice. I can't remember when, but our team wasn't doing so good, and Keith yelled at us to come into the circle. Then he was like, everyone go run a lap around the field. So when we came back, I gathered everyone together. And at this point, I couldn't really figure out people's attitudes. And so I kind of just told them, I was like, this is what we worked for. And if you want to be here, good. But if not, then don't be here. But if you're going to stay, you need to work hard because it's not fair for half of us. And then at that, from the rest of that practice and there on fourth, I think it really clicked for a lot of the girls, and we just locked in.
Do you guys remember that moment?
Yeah.
How can you not, right? Coach is yelling, you got to run laps, and you're saying you're either in or out, right? We're drawing a line here. How about for you girls? Is there a specific moment, maybe even like a lunch that you guys shared together where you guys bonded?
We've had many team dinners throughout the year, and that was – we had a lot more than last year, and I felt like we clicked a lot this year with that.
Coach, coming into this year, like, did you guys set some goals? Like, hey, you know, we want to win Valley. We want to do this. Or just more like, hey, we got a good team. Let's work. And if it happens, then it happens.
Well, it was kind of like, I mean, I've been blessed with some talent throughout the years. And we had a great group of girls last year. And so some of the girls were questioning. Once those girls graduated, one went on, catcher at Fresno State, Riley Bocchini. It's hard to replace a Riley Bocchini or a Carson Bauer or Macy Whaley or these other girls that are there that kind of set the standard. I just got the girls together, and some of the girls were doubting, like, Coach, we're not going to be that. We're not going to be good this year. We're not. I said, we're going to learn how to win different. That's what we're going to do. And I knew the heart of the team, but I'm big on chemistry. And I seen the chemistry of the team was different this year. They were together. And so I knew we had a chance once we started playing. And Webster, like, she sat behind Carson Bauer for 2 years. That's hard to do. She has all these school records. And when I came in this year and I seen how hard she's worked throughout the summer, I was like, we got a good chance at this. This kid can pitch. She can flat out. She's a straight pitcher. She's not a thrower. And she just hit her spots and put us in good positions defensively, where we just had to play defense and learn how to get a run an inning and hopefully end up with a big inning.
We got a couple minutes here with you guys. I told you it was going to go by fast, right? So I'm just going to throw out some stats because you talked about how good the team was, but the chemistry means more. But you guys hit, what, before this game, 379 as a team, hit 16 bombs, 79 stolen bases. And when you got a good pitcher in the circle.
Good
right,
recipe.
That's a good recipe for success.
Yes, yes.
All right, so rings, right? Again, it's only been about 13 hours since you guys won. Like, what do you guys want on your rings? You guys thought about that yet? Not
no.
yet?
No.
It's whatever they want.
Whatever they want?
Yep, it's them. This ain't about me. This is about them. I'm going to coach many more high school games. This is some, for some of these girls, this is their last high school game.
So, state playoffs,
Oh, we
right?
got state, yes. Yeah. But yeah.
All right, what's the best way, girls, to wrap up this year so far? Again, you got state playoffs. You got some more games to play in and win. But what are some of your lasting memories, girls?
Maybe when we were mic'd up during practice one time, we did a video, and that was really fun.
All right.
Yeah.
And it was funny? Nobody said anything inappropriate?
No.
No.
Okay,
it was,
good.
It was
good,
good.
Good, 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 good,
yeah,
good.
Keith was Keith was rapping.
I was on my best behavior.
Good. How about for you, others?
I would probably say all the home run celebrations. It's really nice to see the team gather up at home plate and just cheer on for the people that hit bombs.
Macy, what's your lasting memory?
I think all the team dinners. I think we all came together because of how many team dinners we had, and everyone is friends with everyone. And yeah.
That's
it was
awesome.
Really fun.
All right, Keith, final word on this team. You got about 30 seconds here.
Magic. They created magic. Team unity. Like I said, funnest year I had coaching. I don't got words that can explain it, but it was something bigger than me that brought this team together. And it, for me, it was magical.
The girls are shaking their head. Yes. You guys are Valley champs. Thanks, Liberty Madera, for coming in. Really appreciate it. Good
yeah,
job.
Thank you,
guys.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. All right. Thanks, Elise Air Plumbing and Heating, First String Sports, Tanvir for producing the show, John Freitas, Lucas Kirscher, Matthew Bogart, Bogey, they call him, Chris Steiner, and, of course, the Liberty Madera softball team. Thank you guys for listening. Really appreciate it. Have a good rest of the weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.